Hey guys, this is Kenan Thompson. I have a problem with you. Yes, you. None of y'all told me that Auto Trader has millions of new and used cars that I can shop from home. I thought we were friends. I put smiles on your face, but I'm not smiling. No one told me that with Auto Trader, a dealer can deliver cars to my home or that I could shop by price on Auto Trader. No one. Consider this friendship that you just learned we had officially over. Finally, it's easy. Auto Trader.
What's up, everybody? Nick Costos here. College basketball is about to get crazy, and BetQL makes it easier than ever to cash your bets. BetQL analyzes every single tournament matchup so you can succeed with your bracket pools and individual game bets. Which teams will pull off an upset? Who's going to cover the spread? BetQL handles all the hard work so you can win more consistently. Head to BetQL.com today to start your 3-day free trial. That's BetQL.com. BetQL.com today to start your 3-day free trial.
NFL Network host, analyst Rhett Lewis joining the show for the first time from Los Angeles. And just a shameless plug, my favorite show Sundays during the NFL season is NFL Game Day, and he is one of the hosts. Now, Rhett, you went to a school that's known for its basketball. I know you played football in Indiana, but it's known for its basketball in a state that is hoops crazy. So let's start with a little March Madness on the hard court. What's your favorite thing about the tournament?
Oh, gosh. So much. I think as an Indiana alum and, you know, rabid fan, as you mentioned, I think the opportunity to hang banner number 6 is always what brings me back to loving the tournament. It's the optimism. It's the opportunity, right? And especially for a school like ours that has such high expectations each and every year. And, you know, with the exception of a little bit of a down period there in the last couple of years, we're back and we're back in the tourney in a big way. And so that always gets me excited because it's like it's brand loyalty, right? It's you know, you are out there showing your colors for your school. Like, I'm wearing Indiana Hoosiers shoes. I am absolutely wearing my cream and crimson on my sleeve, or I guess on my feet. But that to me, like, it brings out the best of everyone's loyalty about who they love. And then, of course, you know, the surprises, right? The Furmans of the world are what keep us coming back.
So, yes, it is March Madness, and still the NFL cannot go away. Never takes a break. I call it encroachment by the NFL. They're creeping on everybody else in every other sport. Exactly. Seriously. I know you've covered the sport for a long time, but I like asking people their perspective. Did you ever think it would become this year-round behemoth that really never takes a breath?
You know, it's actually a really good question because I kind of always felt like it was, and I'll tell you why. My dad was a head trainer in the NFL for 40 years, and 32 of them were with the Saints. And so I grew up in New Orleans, and, you know, he was a member of an NFL franchise for essentially my entire life before I moved away to college. And so, like, I knew that he was always working, like the 10, 12, 14, sometimes 16 and 18 hour work days, like, didn't stop just because the season was over. So every time everybody would ask you, oh, you get to see your dad a lot more now in the off season, I was always like, yeah, no, I don't, because there really isn't an off season. So I was quite prepared for this when I took this job at NFL Network.
Did you spend a lot of time on fields, in stadiums, in locker rooms then with your dad?
Oh, you better believe it. I was a part of way too many, how should I put this, way too many locker room conversations that I shouldn't have been, or should I say training room conversations that I shouldn't have been at the age at which I was at the time. But it was so much fun, and it's truly what fostered my love for this game and my desire to remain a part of it as much as I could in everything that I've done, both from following football and going to, I don't know, 150 Saints games growing up in the Superdome, and then, you know, playing high school football, playing college football, and then when my hamstrings, you know, weren't going to allow me to play in the NFL, how do I find a way to cover the NFL? And that's basically what I've been trying to do ever since.
I've never been to the Superdome for a football game, been there for other events. What's it like when the Saints fans are at full throat?
I mean, it's unlike anything I've ever been a part of. I mean, I literally remember sitting in section 253 on the second level of the Superdome, in the right at about the goal line of where the Saints used to come out of their locker room and come onto the field. And in the early 90s, when the Saints were competing for NFC West, then division titles, and playing the 49ers, the Falcons, and the Rams twice a year in a convoluted division, obviously, it was like when something good would happen, and when the Saints were thriving, you couldn't hear anything because of the noise in the stadium. Like, it's hard to describe. It's like, it's so loud, you actually can't hear anything, and it all just becomes one noise. That is the loudest place I've ever been. The second loudest is Autzen Stadium in Oregon when I was a player. It's the only other time I've been able to look at somebody right next to me and not hear them talk to me and watch their mouths move, right? And so, like, my mom and I would, like, look at each other, you know, when we were up in the stands, you know, in these games, and, like, and you know, like, she would be talking to him, like, I don't know what the heck you're saying, but this is awesome. And so it is a phenomenal atmosphere. The fans are the best, and especially when they get a little extra time to get, quote-unquote, ready for the game if it's a prime timer.
Rhett Lewis is with us from NFL Network in Los Angeles, where he's one of my favorite hosts of NFL Game Day during the season, but part of Paths of the Draft and Total Access now that it's the quote-unquote off-season. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. Well, given your ties to New Orleans, what's your reaction to the Derek Carr signing?
Yeah, I think I love it for Derek. I'm happy for his family. I think they'll love New Orleans. It's such a great city. And, look, I think with any city in America these days, it's not perfect, but its imperfection is also what makes it beautiful. And I think it also, it's also a way to describe what the Saints are right now, which, you know, is imperfect, but on their way to getting better. And I think this will be one of the best defenses, if not the best, that Derek Carr has ever played with. And I think now if you get a healthy and motivated Michael Thomas, and by all accounts from Derek Carr himself, that's what he believes the Saints are going to get. That's what the Saints believe they're going to get. That's why they reworked his contract to keep him around. So you throw a couple of Buckeye wideouts right there, and Chris Olave, who was fantastic last year, Michael Thomas, you know, back healthy, man, Alvin Kamara rolling again. Like, this is fun. And then you got a touchdown scorer now in Jamal Williams. So, I think there's a lot to like about this Saints team. At this point, I feel like they are the team best positioned to win the NFC South right now.
I know from my listeners and my audience that the Aaron Rodgers fatigue has grown greatly over the past, not just the past couple weeks, but really the past couple years. But I want to hear it from your perspective, because I am in my little bubble with my sports radio show. Do you believe that's the case around the league, or do you believe that Aaron Rodgers, because of his past and his potential, is still one of those players that brings people to games or brings people to their TV sets and their radio stations?
I think for sure he is, especially in New York, where they've been searching for a quarterback since Joe Namath left. If you remember, I think it was like 1968. So
I don't remember, but thank you.
Yeah. I mean, Amy, like, here's the craziest stat of this whole Aaron Rodgers thing. Like, when he joins the Jets this year and starts the year as their quarterback in week one, and then finishes week 18 with 4,450 yards through the air, he will be the first Jets quarterback with a 4,000-yard passing season since Joe Namath.
Nuts.
In 1967. Like, come on. So I think automatically he becomes an absolute star. I mean, and obviously he already was in Green Bay, but he will – and he's got great talent around him, too, and great young talent. So it's a matter of them getting on the same page in a timely manner.
So he's worth it, then?
Yeah, I think so.
There's still not a whole lot going on between the Ravens and Lamar Jackson, at least no movement that we know of publicly. If they come to you and ask you, and I mean the Ravens front office, what do we do here? What do you think, Rhett? What's the best course of action?
They're essentially putting the ball in Lamar's court, right? They're like, okay, we've given you a number of offers, and the only one that we really know of is one that at some point included 3 years, $133 million fully guaranteed, like Lamar tweeted the other day. We assume that that was the offer. We also assume he turned that down. Otherwise, like, what are we doing here, right? The Ravens are saying, okay, this is where we stand right now, and other teams, you are free to try and offer Lamar more. And they're basically hoping another team essentially sets the market for Lamar, in which they will more than likely match the offer. And they'll have five business days to do it if and when it comes in. If it doesn't, they're essentially playing chicken with Lamar. Like, okay, you're going to play in the franchise tag or what? Not play at all? I don't know if that's good for either party. So I think at some point this comes to a resolution. I'm not certain that it's going to happen today or tomorrow or even in the next week or so. I think what's going to ultimately happen is we'll see the negotiations between the Ravens and Lamar pick up ahead of that summer deadline to get a long-term deal done for players that were given the franchise tag. Because at this point, if somebody was going to sign him to an offer sheet, we'd know by now. Like, I don't know that anybody's out there like, oh, well, we'd like to sign it, but we got to do a little more homework. No, the homework has been done, and it's either, you know, we're not going to offer him, or we just don't have what he wants at this point. And so then it goes back to the Ravens.
Rhett Lewis of NFL Network is with us here after hours, CBS Sports Radio. And yes, we know March Madness is going on, but this is March Madness of a different kind. So Rhett, you're part of Path to the Draft, and we know it's all building up now to what's to come in a couple of months. The Panthers made this big move. They jumped to number one. What should they do with that overall number one pick? Which quarterback do you think is the best fit?
So this is a complicated question, but I think oftentimes when we're trying to decide fit, because I think that's a great way that you ask that question, right, is because it's not necessarily the best quarterback or the best player, but who is the best fit at that position for that team. And like when I think about Carolina, think about new head coach Frank Reich, and I think about the players that have played quarterback for him in the past. Let's just go back. Matt Ryan. You know, big, strong quarterback. Look, he was past his prime at that point when joining the Colts. It didn't work out. Fine. Right. Carson Wentz, kind of same type, right? A little bit more mobile than Matt Ryan. For whatever reason, still didn't work out. You go back, Nick Foles, Carson Wentz before that in Philadelphia when Frank was there. You go further back to when he was in San Diego with the then Chargers, the then San Diego Chargers. You're talking about Philip Rivers. C.J. Stroud fits that mold of quarterback that Frank Reich has been with virtually his entire coaching career. Even going back to when he played behind Jim Kelly in Buffalo, that's the type of player that we're kind of talking about in C.J. Stroud, who I think is more mobile than we probably give him credit for, as he showed us in that Georgia game this past year. So I tend to think that they are trending towards C.J. Stroud. Big arm, accuracy and ball placement are his calling cards. I think Frank Reich will love that in his style of offense. So that's generally where I'm leaning at this point, but I think Bryce Young's wait will probably last another 7 minutes once C.J. Stroud's name gets called, if that is in fact how it goes.
It is incredible with the retirement of some of the greatest quarterbacks we've ever seen. Certainly this generation that includes Peyton Manning and Tom Brady, and you mentioned Philip Rivers, obviously Eli, Ben Roethlisberger. The position seems younger and younger, doesn't it, Rhett? And yet we've got some pretty amazing young studs at that position.
Yeah, that's what makes, you know, what the Houston Texans do at number two so important, I think, because you're sitting there in the AFC and you're like, all right, do we have a Josh Allen? Do we have a Joe Burrow? Do we have a Justin Herbert, a Lamar Jackson? You know, if Deshaun Watson comes back to the player that he was, a couple of years ago, like, if we don't, we better go find that dude and do whatever it takes to get him. Otherwise, what are we really doing here? Right. I mean, like, that's what this has become. It's like a Royal Rumble cage match situation where you're coming off the top ropes trying to find your quarterback, right? I mean, like, you gotta go get that guy, Amy. And so, like, that's why I think, you know, even in the NFC, where maybe it's a little bit more difficult to identify the top five quarterbacks, you still have to have that guy to compete in this league. And that's why the Panthers moved all the way up to number one. That's why the Colts are going to take a quarterback or figure out a deal to get a marquee quarterback, because they can't keep playing Band-Aid at that position like they have. So I truly think, Amy, you're going to see four quarterbacks off in the top five picks once we get to April 27th.
Wow. What's another position in this NFL draft that you think could be very impactful in years to come?
Yeah. Edge rusher is the next one, and I think edge rushers and quarterbacks will ultimately occupy six of the first seven picks. That's really all you need to know to tell you what this game has become. It's become a game where if you don't have a quarterback, you're not going anywhere, and if you can't get after the quarterback, you know, you're also, you know, in a bit of trouble. And so that's why we're going to see that type of emphasis on those players early in this draft. I think you'll see Will Anderson and Tyree Wilson come off the board. 1-2, Jalen Carter, depending on how comfortable teams get with what's going on off the field with him, will then be the next guy. So you're talking about defensive front players and quarterbacks that are going to dominate the top 10. And then beyond that, you're looking at corners. I think you could see a cornerback go in the top 10. I think you'll see a bunch go. You'll probably see five, maybe six go in the first round. And then for the first time in, gosh, as far as I can remember, we're going to see five tight ends go in the first round. So that's not typically a position where we see that happen, but you're going to see some combination of Dalton Kincaid from Utah, Darnell Washington from Georgia, Michael Mayer from Notre Dame, Luke Musgrave from Oregon State, and probably one or two others that are going to get their names called on April 27th. Like, it's going to be a really fun draft.
It's interesting, too, because that tight end position, while we have a few incredible stars, Travis Kelce, Mark Andrews, of course, Darren Waller getting traded, it really is top heavy. It's not a super deep position in the NFL currently.
No, you're right. It's like, it's why if you play fantasy football, it feels like we're always talking about, oh, my gosh, the tight ends are killing my team. Yeah, if you don't have Kelce, or if you don't have Kittle, like a Waller who's been injured, by the way, and played, you know, missed 14 games the last 2 years.
Right.
You're in trouble. Like, you're just constantly trying to find, you know, a matchup guy. And so I think in a sense, that's where fantasy meets reality this year, because, you know, I think teams understand that, you know, the team that's now won the Super Bowl twice in 4 years is the best tight end in the game. And that probably means something. And we probably got to be trying to find one of those guys. You know, there is a player like that in this draft in Dalton Kincaid. I'm not saying he's going to be Travis Kelce, but he kind of fits that mold where he's not a sixth offensive lineman, but could be a third wide receiver.
Yes. Before I let you go, Rhett, in the spirit of March Madness and underdogs and dark horses and Cinderellas, and it's March, but we know that half the NFL playoff field turns over every year. So coming off of last season, maybe looking at some of the moves they've made to this point, who do you think is a team out there that is putting itself in position at least to come roaring into 23 and really make some noise?
Oh, man. I actually think, and this is going to sound kind of crazy, but I really think the Houston Texans are putting some serious building blocks together here. And I think they've been doing it kind of meticulously over the course of the last couple of years. And you found a running back in Damian Pierce last year. You've got one of the marquee left tackles in the game in Laremy Tunsil, right? So that is one of the top four premier positions overall in football. It's quarterback, it's left tackle, it's edge rusher, and it's cornerback. They've got the corner in Derek Stingley. They drafted him last year. I truly think if he was healthy, we'd be talking about his play along the same lines we were talking about Sauce Gardner this year. So you got Stingley, you've got Laremy Tunsil, locked up two of those positions. You've got some really good pieces outside of those marquee positions as well that are young. John Metchie, who, you know, is coming back from cancer. Hopefully he's going to be good to go. And then you've got Christian Anderson, the linebacker. But if they can find a quarterback this year in Bryce Young, if that's the guy at two or whomever the guy is at two, now you're talking about three of those four positions. You go out and find that edge rusher, then, you know, beyond. And now we're talking about a team that can really start to make some noise. In a division, you know, I know Jacksonville's on the come up but I still think that that division's got some competitiveness there, and I think the Texans are going to have something to say about it.
Rhett Lewis is part of NFL Network, and I got to say, as a disciple of NFL Game Day, one of my favorites to watch on Sundays. Yeah, I'm telling you, I don't know if it's a secret, but it can hold its money, or hold its own, I should say, on Sundays next to Red Zone. And I love the story about your dad working in the NFL. That certainly gives a unique perspective, too. So you can find him on Twitter at Rhett, R-H-E-T-T, NFL. It's great to catch up with you. It's weird because it felt like the season never ended, and yet that is the NFL these days. So thank you for a couple of minutes.
Oh, my pleasure, Amy. Anytime. Big fan of your show as well, and appreciate all of our loyal NFL Game Day Live viewers. Hope to see you again next year.